You are listening to a new episode of the Game Deflators podcast. My name's John, and this week I'm joined by Joel.
Hey.
Hey. So here on the Game Deflators podcast, we like to talk about games we've recently picked up, games we're currently playing, and today we're talking Dungeons and Dragons again.
Only reason I'm here again.
Only reason you're here again. Yeah, so Joel did actually hop on an episode, like, I don't know, 6 months ago? I don't remember.
More like a year and a half, I think.
Jeez, that long ago?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's been a while. So we're going to talk D&D because Ryan's not here, and Joel is, as you may have remembered, Dungeon Master for a couple campaigns that we play in, and then I Dungeon Master for Joel. So we both call each other Master?
I mean, I do manage more games than you, so
you do.
But you know, I'm still, who's master and who's apprentice?
I don't know. DM is a very, very clear cut dungeon master. So I've seen you call me DM in text.
No, that's never happened.
I think it has. All right. Well, let's. Normally we talk about what we've recently picked up. So I picked up the new Glory to the Giants Bigsby or whatever the hell it's called, book. So it's all about, obviously, giants in the, you know, world of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, specifically, I want to say the lore behind Forgotten Realms side of things. It's not, I don't think it's got some things to do with Greyhawk and Eberron and a few others, but it's focusing mostly on Forgotten Realms and the lore behind that. And I believe there's one new subclass in there for barbarians.
Yeah, or, and specifically giant race, though.
Right, but it was, I don't think it's a new race, it's a background. Like, you were raised by giants or with giants, so you have, like, those mentalities, and they give you a few other little special abilities that come with that background.
Yeah, so technically...
you were a pet.
Yeah, that, or really just, it opens you up for being able to utilize that story or background for a non-giant type of character.
Yeah.
So, I don't recall. Like, I know the giant race isn't in that book. Isn't there one of the books has a giant race in there? They haven't released that yet. In terms of, like, stats and all of that type of stuff.
Oh, well, there is no giant race. Like, there's the it's Goliaths.
It's at least homebrewed.
I think Goliaths are now canon. So, and those are half-giant race. But there's no giant race, because giants by themselves would just be way too powerful. Even like a level one player character as a giant.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you're massive. You're not fitting into dungeons. I mean, you can have fun with those mechanics if someone wants to homebrew and you have a DM that wants to try to make that work. Like, I don't know, maybe they're wearing a belt that permanently keeps them small so they can hang out with the small folk or to them, you know. But it's, you're not going to end, they're just way too powerful. Just based on their size and what they're fighting against. Can you imagine somebody who's small, a giant who's small, getting into a dungeon and then just it stops working? So then they're just trapped in that dungeon, buried alive forever.
I don't know. I think that's a great mechanic as a DM. Like that player that says, I'm going to play a giant. And you're like, all right, cool. Go ahead and play a giant. Oh, we happen to be in this cave. And oh, your belt just stopped working all of a sudden. You might want to just not be part of the campaign anymore.
Dispel magic on your belt or... somebody slide a hand, takes it off of you when you're not paying attention.
Dude, that'd be hilarious, actually. Yeah. Something to consider.
But the lore's pretty deep. I mean, as far as Forgotten Realms goes, and it's pretty interesting that they're actually finally touching on it. I mean, there's the wikis and all the histories behind the actual fictional novelizations and things that if you really wanted to deep dive into, you could. But the giants, as far as that side of D&D goes, they were around before everything else. Like, mm-hmm. the way they paint that picture was the dragons and the giants were fighting control of the world.
Yeah.
And if the giants and dragons hadn't killed each other to the point where, like, the smaller races could thrive, then they would just be ruling the area.
I think that'd be a pretty cool story, actually, just to have, like, dive into just World of Giants and have either... playing a campaign that's fully everyone's a giant and you're just in like giant world, right? So everything's just stupid powerful. right? Like, so all your characters are like dumb, you know, attack and everything else in defense, and then you're rolling up against dragons and stuff. Like, it's just standard, you know, fodder throughout.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
that'd be pretty fun, I think.
Like, the danger would be like the smaller creatures that use magic, and like your, you know, every encounter with a dragon's just a standard encounter.
Yeah, yeah, I think that'd be hilarious. And then like you're just playing this role, and you have like groups of characters that just kind of roll in to try and attack your group of giants, right? And like, you know, standard fighters and paladins and stuff trying to take you down. You're like, nope, just gonna absolutely.
You could always trick your group too into saying like, hey, why don't you create your race and everything, and not tell them they're actually giant variations of those characters until they encounter like all the small folks and realize their 5x5 was actually like a 15x15.
Yeah.
And they're massive.
That'd be a pretty fun, like, short campaign or even a one shot just to do something like that. Well, I think it's fair to say that was your big pickup for the week, right?
Yeah. And then I gave you a book. Did you have a chance to look at it?
I haven't yet.
Yeah. It's actually pretty interesting. I don't want to misspeak. I think it came from Kobold Press, but it's called Tome of Alchemy.
Yeah.
It's either Kobold Press or maybe Frog God Games. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
I think it's Frog God.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, either one, they make some good stuff.
Because Kobold hardcovers most of their stuff, I think.
Well, I have the hardcover. That's why I gave you the soft cover. Oh, okay. I didn't realize I had double picked up.
Gotcha.
Or, no, I actually, you know what? It is a Frog God, because I ordered from them and they accidentally sent that to me instead of what I ordered, because I already had the paperback.
Gotcha.
And they just told me to keep it and sent me what I wanted. I mean, so,
it's probably more expensive between the shipping back and forth.
Right. So yeah, that's why I was like, I got an extra one. You can have it. But it sets up an entire alchemy class.
Okay.
And so, or you can, like, they have three variations, and then it talks about like brewing times and what you can do and flasks you can carry, and it's all about powering up or splash damage or, you know, dealing. It's kind of, I would say it's a better build than the Alchemist Artificer that Wizards of the Coast put out for their class.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing an Artificer now, obviously, in the Witchlight campaign, and it's okay. Like, it's not my favorite class that I've played, to be honest. There's some cool, unique things with it, but it's all right so far. Maybe as the levels kind of progress and we get into, like, you know, once level 8 hits, maybe it'll be a little better. Level 6, you know, when I unlock a few more things, it'll feel a little different. But as of right now, it's kind of like, yeah, it's a toss-up, right, as to how much I like it. Okay, so that was our pickups. As far as what we're currently playing, right now I'm still playing White Knight Chronicles on the PlayStation 3. So for those that have been listening, this episode may come out in a week or two. It may come out a month after the fact. So maybe I'm past this if you're listening in. But I just finished up the Underbelly of Greed. So pretty cool how that's progressing right now. And really the battles in that one are interesting. So I was telling Ryan recently that the battles in that game, it doesn't feel like I've been challenged at any point. Like, most battles they go and I'm like, okay, whatever. Like,
well, what style is the game? Is it a brawler, like, side-scroller?
It's kind of like, it's an RPG, but it's like, it's almost like action RPG meets turn-based. So, like, you're in this, like, action RPG setting where you can move around and switch your enemies, but you have, like, a scrolling circle that it, you know, or loading circle, basically, for the different moves that you want to do, and you have, like, an attack, I'm trying to think of the right word, you have like little blocks that basically say what type of attack you can do, and it kind of loads up additional attacks. So like, it's an AC meter. That's what it is. And okay. So you basically have, like, for example, a combo might use like 4 of your AC bars.
Right? Gotcha. And so you have so much that you could do. It's basically regenerating resources that limits what moves you can pull off.
Yeah. And like, you're continually like hitting with your normal, like, 0 AC type of attacks and trying to do that damage, which is fine. Things like your magic don't remove AC, but you continue to build up that AC meter, and until you get to a certain point, then you start using combos on the enemies. But it's a little sluggish at times in the combat because you're just kind of sitting there. You're not doing anything, right? Like, I could realistically switch between characters, but that's such a pain in the ass to do, to have to constantly switch. So I'm keeping with one character.
Yeah, the one that I was really thinking it was sounding like Infinite Undiscovery.
I haven't played that one yet, but that's on my radar.
It's an older one. It's the traditional turn-based RPG, but, well, I'd say it's more akin to Knights of the Old Republic in the fact that you can go to each of your companions and tell them to, number one, you put them in a standard fighting mode. Like, are they going to be defensive, offensive?
You can do that too in this game.
Are they going to do spells?
Yep.
And then you can do like three or four moves ahead and program, like set them up.
Yeah.
And then your main character, you free control. So you go in, you move them around, you hit your different attack combos. I think the main character's name is Capel.
Yeah.
So you just do your sword attacks and songs and the different crap that he can do. But it's free-flowing for you.
And this game's super similar, and that is free-flowing for the character you control. But what's really odd is they start you out with, like, create your own character type of thing for this world. But the character you create is, like, a secondary character. So you've got, like, the main character named Leonard. And you're going through and he's doing all the voice, blah, blah, and your secondary character you create is just kind of in the background, like, oh, what am I doing here type of thing.
Ooh.
And you just never really, like, I don't understand why I would ever control the secondary character over the main character. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, maybe they're just setting you up for a big story twist through the game.
I don't know. Maybe he becomes evil. I don't know. It seems really weird. But overall, the game's pretty good. It is just like you said, with infinite discovery. You preload your characters with the types of attacks that they want to do. You have like three bars and then like a last bar that allows you to do like items and such. And then you have like a grid system You have like spheres. There's like eight of them for like different types of weapons that you would specialize in. And then you can select, oh, I want to do slash. Oh, well, now that you've unlocked slash, now you have hack and you've got cure that you can unlock. Okay, cool. Pay, you know, points towards one of those, and you get points every time you level up. Okay, you use cure.
Is it like an orb-based talent tree like Final Fantasy X was?
No. Definitely different. So it's similar in the respect of, like, you can pick the class, or not class, but like the weapon type that you want to utilize, right? And
yep.
And pick that. But then it's just like line by line where, okay, cool, I learned slash. Okay, you've unlocked XYZ things that you can also use in this class. Oh, you did cure. Okay, now you can do Cure Plus, and we've also unlocked Revive.
So it's really just like a deeper talent tree where they lock you more to a specific path?
Yeah, pretty much. Whereas, obviously, Final Fantasy, you could be like, oh, I want to do a couple things here, and I want a sphere grid all the way over here.
Right.
So, yeah. So playing that, we also started playing a little bit of Cthulhu Age of Madness, which is a card-based game. So since we're playing games tonight, maybe we can pop that out too. Super simple. It's basically four elder gods that are in the world of Cthulhu, essentially, or that world. And you have these seals that you have to break, and you have cultists that you essentially have to convert. So you get like four cultists and you unlock a seal. But and once you get four seals, you win the game. But there's cards that allow you to like steal other players' seals. You can go ahead and unlock a seal right off the bat. There's things that allow you to have your opponent discard cards. You can pull cards from their hand. You can dig through the graveyard. Tons and tons of stuff. And then your elder gods, when you complete a seal, have their own ability that they can utilize. So the one I was playing the other day allows me to take two cultists from the graveyard. So basically, go ahead and create my seal, take my cultists that are in the graveyard already and pull them out, and then have two more cultists ready to go for my next seal. So it's pretty cool. So maybe we'll dive into that. And then magic.
So the goal is to summon the elder god, not stop its summoning.
Basically,
so yeah. Everyone's trying to get their god summoned.
Yeah, essentially. Gotcha. It's pretty cool. Super easy, quick to play. The other game is Magic the Gathering Arena. Still playing that, obviously. And I am at a diamond level 2, trying to get to Mythic, which is the highest rank you can get in arenas. There's no, like, once I'm in diamond, like, there's no way going back down to platinum or gold or anything. You're locked into that tier.
Ooh.
So if I can get the mythic, I'll be locked into mythic, and then I can get the reward at the end of the 30-day period for rankings. And then what'll end up happening is after everything is like lost, essentially, like when they reset, I'll go to gold automatically. So I don't have to go through fucking bronze and silver and platinum again. I would go automatically platinum, not gold. So I wouldn't have to go through bronze, silver, and gold. I would automatically be in platinum and can make my way to diamond and a mythic again, hopefully, after the fact. But after a 30-day period, you get like 6 packs and like 1,000 gold and something else, which is, you know, it's worth it because every day you do your dailies, you get a certain amount of gold points that you could put towards packs. And it allows me to kind of stay in practice with what the new Magic Gathering meta is. So when I play in person, it's a little easier to kind of recognize the cards that I'm playing against.
Yeah, I always found that difficult. Like when I did, I only got into Magic when they did, I believe it was Duel of the Planeswalkers. That was it. I was like, oh, I learned this system. I kind of know what these cards are. All right, this isn't bad. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of stuff changed, and I was like, I can't keep up.
Yeah, that's kind of a downside with them. They've pumped out so many cards in the last couple of years. They've extended, at least they've extended the standard rotation is now, I think, 3 years instead of 2 years. So that's kind of good, which I didn't realize until, like, you know, I spent 6 months because of the baby and everything, or actually 9 months not playing any Magic. So I had just gotten back into it. And guys I'm playing with were like, oh, yeah, they just went ahead and extended it. So we're going to get these cards for another full-blown year. I'm like, oh, okay. So you mean I don't have to really dive into anything new and force myself to buy a crap ton of their cards. And what's Ryan and I were actually just talking Magic Gathering on another episode. And, dude, I'm rolling in these Magic events with, like, an $80 deck. And I'm playing against people with, like, $400 decks. And I'm wiping the floor of them. It's absolutely hilarious. And, you know, getting store credit, opening packs, you know, because why not? Some of it could be, you know, considered luck, you know, because the meta is, like, there's a meta for a reason.
Right.
But if you're rolling in with, like, anti-meta stuff or, like, really fast-paced, like, burn decks, I mean, you always have a chance, right?
Oh, that's always fun. Like when you're playing specific manipulative decks that manipulate everyone else's cards,
yeah,
or hurt their deck hands, and it's like,
yeah,
I just always found that fun because, like, I'm not just beating you. I'm not playing the game you want me to play.
Yeah,
I'm playing a different variation of the same one, and you don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. It's fun.
Cool. You have that whole deck in your hand. Awesome. Why don't you pull some more cards and dump that?
And that's what I'm working on right now, a blue-black deck that mills out my entire opponent's deck and then allows me to steal creatures from them. So, like, that's the goal. But it also requires several hundred dollars in cards. And I'm just like, man, like, can I buy it? Yeah. Do I want to? Eh, not really. Like, if I can roll through with, like, you know, $40, $60 in cards and just kind of roll through a competition and be fine, I'll do it. Like, that's just a lot more fun to me to just play those, like, little janky decks and make your way through, like, three or four players and just seeing the looks on their faces when they're like, wow, my, you know, $300-$400 deck just got beat by a green poison deck that you paid $40 for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you don't need to put a lot of money into Magic to have fun.
Yeah, I always like the different aspects. It's okay, the game is supposed to be I attack you, you attack me. We're smacking each other's life points first to zero.
Yeah.
How about I make you run out of cards?
Yeah.
How about I raise my health points so high that you'll never beat me? How about I just attack your life points directly and you can't block any of what I'm throwing at you?
Yeah, that stuff's always fun. Like Shadow. I used to play Shadow decks in the day, and I had, like, cards that say, oh, well, when this hits, your opponent's life total's half. I'm like, okay, cool. So, like, turn three, I'll equip that. I'll swing with a Shadow creature that, well, you can't block it, and you're now at 5 HP. Have fun.
Very effective early on, yeah. But less as you go.
Well, even a burn decks are great. I could be turn three, like 11 points of damage in sometimes, and people are just like, yeah, I quit, and they just concede. Or there's been times where I literally drop my first creature and I'm playing against a deck that they just know is going to lose to burn pretty consistently, and they're like, nope, concede after, like, literally turn one. They're just like, I'm not going to deal with this. Wow. So yeah. Okay. Anything that you're playing right now before we dive into some talk here?
I mean, as far as video games go, still just always popping in on Neverwinter, the free-to-play one, because they're always releasing something new. I'm actually almost caught up to where I want to be in that game because I took a few months off. Played Lords of the Fallen. Do you know what that one is?
Yeah, the new one?
The 2014 one.
Oh, okay.
Went back and was playing that, and got a couple more playthroughs to, like, clean it all up, but had a few achievements that didn't pop.
Mm.
Like, so I just got to redo it and hope that they do on the second playthrough, because they were like, beat this boss. I did. Never unlocked. But as I'm playing, I go, okay, this is like a light version of Dark Souls. Like,
yeah,
the combat can be tough. You know, you have your stamina bar, you have your, you know, ability bar, you have your health, you know, you have all the things that are standard in it, and you can't just go wailing away.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just a few key moves that they put into that game that Once you've mastered them, you pretty much whoop everything. So gotcha. Like shield bash charge. So you just run at something with the shield, you stagger them, and then just immediately follow it up with a huge slash, and you nearly take them down like half.
So some janky stuff to kind of get you through the game quicker.
I mean, you can utilize that. I played through as like just the bashing warrior. My next playthrough is going to be as the rogue archetype, so it's just trying to use the different powers to sneak behind and do backstabs and do the huge crit damages. And then the last one's going to be more of a... it's a warrior, rogue, and a cleric, basically, is the build. So the cleric is all the extra magic damage and arcane damage and things like that.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, you know, before we jump into our discussion on D&D, you can find the Game Deflators on thegamedeflators.com, our website. You can find us on social media at Game Deflators on Twitter and at The Game Deflators on Instagram and Facebook. And actually, Twitter is X now, so I don't know. It's so stupid. And then YouTube. Find us on there. And you're listening to a podcast. You're on a podcast application. Leave us a 5-star review. And check us out on another podcast. And leave us a 5-star review there, too, because we like multiple 5-star reviews.
Just keep clicking all of them.
All of them. Every single one. All right, so I figured discussion-wise here on D&D, because we don't have an inflation deflation for the week, is miniature painting. So process time, and do you still actually find it to be fun? Because, dude, it is tedious.
It depends. So I'm getting better. I find the larger minis way more fun to paint than the smaller standard WizKids minis because it's just, it's difficult and tedious to get into the small little crevices and cracks to color those things. I get why people who do enjoy painting paint more Warhammer stuff, simply because it's standard bigger. Like, I want to say their smaller minis are about the size of a large creature in the, like, out of WizKids or D&D minis. Like, nothing's as, you know, your standard player character is supposed to be a medium-sized creature, and those minis are really hard to paint. Yeah. Especially if you like detail or have some kind of standard for quality that like you personally go for. But, you know, painting, lately I went on a painting tear because I was trying to do a one shot for a friend group of mine, and you printed 3D printed a bunch of stuff for me, and it was all I could do to try to, it was constant. I probably put in a 2-week time frame, close to 35 hours worth of painting.
Yeah.
Between, because with the stuff you printed, I had to prime it too.
Yeah.
And assemble a lot of it. You assembled some of the pieces for me, but still, just, you know, all the different little things that had to be painted and primed, and then just the time waiting for things to dry. That's why, you know, when I have a lot of little ones, I try to do them all at once, or at least stages all together. Is it enjoyable? It wasn't towards the end. Yeah. Like, it was more just, I have to get this done. The first few ones that I was doing, I was like, oh, that came out good. That's what I wanted it to look like. And it's always surprising learning that, like, as I'm painting, to go, that doesn't look right. But then going, well, it's wet. See what it looks like when it finally dries. Mm-hmm. And then it dries and you're like, oh, that's way more badass than I thought I was going to look.
Yeah.
Like when I was painting all the cannons for the pirate ships.
Yeah. This came out good.
Yeah, I was impressed. Like, I wasn't like, ooh, I did such a good job. But it was like, at the end, it was, I am pleased with how my vision came out when it all dried. Because I was like, I should put, like, rust and, like, streaks, because it's supposed to be a pirate ship. These are not perfect gun cannons. They got rust on them. They got water marks and all sorts of things. And it came out pretty good. The last big mini that you gave me and put together, that one probably took, I want to say,
easily like 10 hours.
It's definitely not done. I ended up just finishing it because I didn't have time to take all the modeling epoxy and fill the cracks. But it's a massive shark god. And it's, I mean, easily took you probably, 42 hours to print total? All the pieces?
Well, depends on how many times I did two in a tray. God, what was it? So four body pieces.
I mean, you got to count the base.
Four body pieces is 24 hours. The base was, yeah, it was like 48 hours for just the body pieces and the base. Throw in the fins. It was about a 60-hour print, roughly, over the span of like, you know, I'm only rolling with one smaller printer, right? If I had like a Photon 8K or a Saturn or something like that, I could print bigger minis on a more consistent basis. And if I had multiple printers, of course, it'd be much faster. But I'm rolling one printer and, like, you know, you were asking me, you're like, oh, how long is that one piece going to take? I'm like, well, that piece is going to take 7.5 hours to print.
Right.
So it's just, and then that's assuming it doesn't fail. And we had two failures. So realistically, it was more like probably close to 70 hours to print those. Now, it's a set it, forget it type of deal, right?
Like, right.
I can't do anything about it if it fails. I just have to let it roll through. And if I happen to catch it 2-3 hours in, I'll be like, oh, that's failing. Let me go ahead and figure out what the hell's going on. I think ultimately it was a matter of the resin was older for those couple failures.
Also, just making sure that the pieces were hollow rather than solid just because it couldn't handle the weight.
Oh, yeah. The solid thing like that killed it. Now, some of those pieces were solid, like you probably noticed. Like,
yeah, the fins.
The head and the fins and the tail were all solid. The three body pieces in the middle were hollow, and then the base was hollow.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that was the right move to do that. And then everything else I printed for you was solid. But yeah, I mean, so in terms of enjoyment, like for me, like my process is, you know, if I'm looking at a bunch of smaller minis, I will typically paint everything black right off the bat. So black paint, okay, put it aside. Black paint, put it aside. And I do that for all of them. I don't normally prime even my printed ones because I have so many layers of paint on there that I'm not worried about it coming off. What I do prime is like if I'm doing a base and I'm trying to paint the base down and do like crackle effects and stone and all of that, I'll usually prime that. But with my smaller stuff, like I don't worry about it. If a little bit of paint comes off, it's not like I'm constantly using them and rubbing them and chipping them and all that. Like it's a one or two use type of thing. And if it is consistent use, I'm usually the one handling it and it's kind of sitting on a board. So it's not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, looking at that larger mini, I could see like, the dragon turtle I painted, we ended up using it and I didn't clear coat it. I think I'm going to have to pick up and do that because...
Like on top of it?
Oh, just on the whole thing because we had a character leap onto it and grapple onto it and try to start stabbing into it, which worked out great for the character, but I used like the modeling, like a little less than sticky tack. Like the you know what I'm talking about, stick to the bottom just to put the character on. And then when I took it off, it took like... Not like peeled it off, but it just took off a slight layer of paint. So now there's a dot on it that's lighter in color than everything else.
Yeah, I would hit something like that. They sell like a matte finish that you can buy in a spray can for like any sort of paint job, like even automotive stuff. Just get like a matte version because if you do the gloss, it's super shiny and it's not worth it. But a matte finish kind of gets you a nice little bit of sheen to it, but it's still protected.
Well, I definitely want to try to have that more glossy look for the creatures that are supposed to be underwater.
Well, yeah, that makes sense because you want that wet effect.
Yeah.
But you can theoretically, like, areas of water, you could put, like, you know, if there's water present, make that glossy and the other stuff not so glossy or even, like, splotches of gloss. So there's ways it can work. But, you know, to my process again, like, you know, everything will get painted black, then I'll dry brush on some white. And then, you know, usually I don't usually dry brush too much stuff. I usually do a nice coat. I do have a black and then a white because it helps me see more of the details versus like the standard gray finish. So it's kind of similar to slap chop style, similar to that, but at the same time, it's not. Slap chop's a lot faster. My process is still slower, but I can bang out like a little mini in 30 minutes, roughly. And so through that process, I can paint, you know, easily like 4 or 5 minis in a couple hours, like little ones.
Mm-hmm.
But the big ones, I like to be super detailed. So I don't know if you saw my Baylor that I printed out.
It looked like you spent a lot of time.
I spent a lot of time on that because it was, I dry brushed a lot of that that color for the skin because it is a, you know, demon or whatever. So brushed in a lot of that detail. And then I went through on like its muscle structure and put in like that bright red. And then I put in like black line with a detail brush and a brush that in. Like it came out really good. And then I did like crackle and mountain effect and like rust type of look on the actual like base as well.
I've been trying different techniques just to see what works better for the bigger ones. For example, other than the primer coat, I was going dark with some of them, especially like some of the pirates. Like there was a Knoll pirate captain that I was using. I painted the whole thing black,
yeah,
and then let it dry. And it was you could see some of the gray of the piece through it, but I just let it sit. Then went through and started layering up my browns and all the other things that I wanted on it. With the dragon turtle, I went a different way. I painted the whole thing gray to primer it. Then I went over it with a dark green, let that sit completely dry, and then I hit it with the shade of the Knoll oil to darken mm-hmm. everything up, fill in all the cracks, and then came back over it with lighter greens and like lime greens and even yellows to hit and edge the highlights and things like that. I never went back into any of the darker recesses of the skin or the plates or any of that stuff after the fact, because the Knoll oil had done all the shadow and dark work mm-hmm. in that. And then I went back and I touched up the shell and added extra like color streaks and growing patterns to the shell itself to trying to like highlight and create like growth and stuff like that. Just going back and doing like small detail work. I think that's that one. I want to say probably came out better than the Shark God one.
Well, you're not done with the Shark God one.
Yes. Well, because of the cracks, and then it was getting it to a point where I felt it would be good enough for the campaign.
Yeah.
Or for the play. So ideally I'm going to go back and fill it in with some epoxy and sand it down and then try to repaint, maybe touch up a few areas, but I still think it came out pretty good. That one as well. I stayed away from the Knoll oil on that one and just pretty much did a lot of dry brushing edges and like a lot of the blending of the shark skin stuff, because I wanted to have like a top color and a bottom color to it. Mm-hmm. And it's got all those different parts like tentacles and hooks on the like the claws on the tentacles. And then, yes, it's still a shark god and it's got tentacles.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, and then like it had seemed like it was growing all these teeth out of it, but I didn't want it to be true teeth. I wanted it to be more horns. So I didn't paint everything that was coming out of it white.
Yeah.
It's just kind of stuck to a more like a bone color or the actual skin color and added like small little white highlights to it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is like even utilizing like lighter colors, right? So I got all those army paints recently. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if I have a blue cape that mm-hmm. I have on a character, usually I'm going through, I'm doing the whole thing black first. I'm covering that in blue. I'm painting in my recesses in like a little bit of black, right, to kind of give that shadow effect. But then I'm going over it again with a lighter blue and really lightly dry brushing that to kind of accent some of like the top areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it, they come out really good when it's all said and done. So
the one thing I've seen, and I've been watching some techniques and I've been trying to, you know, utilize them, like stuff that I've seen on YouTube, is watering down the paints and doing a lot of layering on your highlights. Letting it dry, doing another layer, letting mm-hmm. it dry, doing another layer, because it naturally blends its colors in as the water kind of runs down the side, not drips, but just kind of like blends down the sides mm-hmm. of where your highlights are not, and just yeah. kind of makes it so you're not having to go back and find different colors to fill in that shading. It's the same color. It's just layered up.
Yeah, some areas are darker than others. And Army Paint actually has speed paints, which is exactly that. It's a thinned out version of their paint, so you don't have to go through and do the ratios of water to paint. It's mm-hmm. already done for you. And they have a whole set. It's like $70 for like 20 bottles of different colors. So I'm probably going to buy some of those at some point, but I'm sitting on like 65 paints and washes and all this other stuff. I don't know if you've seen my paints that I have.
I haven't seen the new set. That yeah, you showed me a picture of the set.
After this, I'll show you. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, airbrushing is something I want to get into too, with the to do like a top and bottom layer, or to create like the glow effects that are coming off of different things that mm-hmm. you're trying to gear towards. But
that sort of white type of dry brushing comes in. That's
yes, what I've dry been brushing doing. From a certain angle to try yeah. to like create that like a glow effect on yeah. it.
Well, you know, next topic here is on the fly storytelling. And I thought this would be pretty cool because, you know, I do this quite a bit actually in my campaign. And more so because I want things to kind of be organic. But, you know, the main thing that I look at here is, you know, players are asking you or asking your NPC stuff and you're like, well, I didn't prepare that. Or, you know, you have non-playable characters that they're just never going to see again. And you just kind of have to create something in the moment. And I know you do that for your stuff. I do it pretty heavily. One of the main things that came up recently was like the time travel stuff.
Right.
Mine, like, it was literally on the fly. A lot of the questions you guys were asking was like, well, these are things that I had thought of, like a direction I might want to go with these characters, but it's not exactly the direction I plan to go. So it's more so on the fly storytelling. And then you're like feverishly taking notes on like, okay, I don't want to forget exactly what the hell we talked about here. So that way I can kind of focus on that moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really, there's two differences. Okay. So the homebrew, everything's from the ground up for me. So it's whenever I bring an NPC in, I already have an idea. Is this going to be someone you're going to run in to and interact with one session? Or is this somebody you're going to visit for multiple sessions, if not have, you know, depending on what you want to do, a recurring thing where you keep running into them? For the homebrew, I think I talked a lot about it in the last podcast, but I got several DM NPCs that just kind of follow you guys along, kind of supplement your group in ways that you guys don't have. Like I always try to create a character that fills a role you are missing.
Yeah. Healer and, or something along those
right,
lines.
And just kind of doesn't offers information, that might be pertinent, but pretty much lets you guys drive the story and they're just along for the ride.
Yeah.
And then have that thing where, well, their paths are going to cross yours or back and forth. So they're not going to just follow you around the whole time. They're going to go off, do their own thing. And that keeps it fresh and not like I'm trying to make it about that character. Because I get rid of that character in the sense of actually one of your central NPC characters, Brother Brayson, like you guys almost lost him right away. He could have died. Mm-hmm. And you guys actually spent a round just letting him die. And I was like, okay, if he dies, he dies. You're going to have another point of contact. And then I actually made his saving throw and he woke up or stabilized long enough for you guys to heal him up. But I was like, I wonder if they're going to let him. And I think you guys were ready to let him die if he was going to. But when it comes to the Witchlight and the NPCs in that one, they have certain roles to play.
Yep.
And there's always options to kind of switch in. Okay, so if they die, there's this other character that could maybe do what you guys need. But it's up to you guys if you guys want to keep those characters or leave those characters. So when I'm prepping, one of the things I do is I don't try to engage with them as much. I let you engage them. So number one, I'm not trying to pull things out of thin air until you guys are ready for it. Mm-hmm. I have an idea of what the character themselves want and what their goals are. So for example, with the homebrew, anytime I create any sort of NPC character, anything that you're interacting with, I always give them what's their motivation for what they're doing and what might be something that would push them away. Like, what do they not have time for? Even if it's like just a shop owner, like, Okay. And just to give them a basic, like flesh out, like they're not just a name behind a counter and to buy and sell. And I always try to give them a motivation beyond just making money and, you know, running my shop or something like that. And then like the more complicated the character, the more interactions you have, the more motivations I bring to that character. It'll write like, sometimes I'll write little notes, sometimes I won't. I'll just know that this is, doesn't matter what you guys want to do, this is this character's goal. You're along for the ride if you want to be, but they're going to move on and do what they need to do because they're NPCs. You guys are the main parts of the story. So if your paths diverge, they diverge. But with the Witchlight one, you guys, there's still a lot of motivations that you guys haven't delved into. And you guys really haven't engaged much with the NPCs in that game very much. There's been a few here and there. And I don't know if it's I've created them or made them forgettable. But you guys, I think it's just simply because in real life, there's so much time between the sessions that you guys, like the other day, you guys forgot about your Bullywug friend.
Oh, yeah, who, absolutely forgot about
who
that.
Who had the balloon that you guys got there with and was like, I'll meet you at this place in 3 days' time. Well, yeah, 3 days in the game turns into, you know, 3 months in real life. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you guys are like, oh, I go, yeah, you guys haven't met with this person. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, that, yeah. And then so I have to remind you guys if the character's not actively traveling with you.
Yeah, I think something like that. You know, I think my wife brought up and your fiance actually brought up is like having a list of like missions or tasks, right? That like we just kind of, it's maybe a separate grid that says, oh yeah, bullywog, 3 days time, blah, blah, oh, this, whatever. So we can kind of keep track of like what the hell we're actually doing. Mm-hmm. And not leave that on the DM, or maybe it is reliant on the DM to do that. But, you know, for me, I take a little different approach because I'm also running, obviously, an out-of-the-book campaign, which mm-hmm. is a little railroady. I mean, mm-hmm. they all are for the most part. Strixhaven, yep. I feel, is very railroady and a lot of homebrew that I have to do. So, obviously, it's like, okay, you have these, like, key things that you have to do. Like, these have to happen. And there's been instances where when you guys are playing, you're like, well, I guess that's what the DM wants us to do. I'm like, correction, that's what the book wants you to do, and I kind of have to have you do that. My stuff is, like, super fluid. So, like, the auric stuff that we've been doing, mm-hmm. there's the book mentions the auric, but it's not a central part of the story. It's more of like, hey, this is a group that happens to be here, and you could fight them.
Well, I did. I since I've been running the actual campaign, the Witchlight campaign, out of the book, and it is... I think anytime you take a pre-written campaign, you're going to be railroading to some extent.
You have to, yeah.
Especially if that's the goal. If everyone's goal is to play this story and you all agreed, hey, we're going to do this, then you have to have that expectation of, okay, if the story gets boring, are you guys going to just say screw it and go off course and I don't railroad you, I let you freely move about the world and just incorporate and start another adventure or do a homebrew thing? Or there's that, you know, there's that freedom there that you either set an expectation for or you don't.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've always said, and then whenever you guys are doing stuff, you know, you've asked me like, is that part of the campaign? I'm like, no, this is extra material that kind of fleshes out the story more or gives you a better background. Or yes, I am kind of railroading you in this point. Like I'll tell you after the fact. Yeah. Because you have to get to this thing. Mm-hmm. Your choices, once you get there, are still yours, but I do have to force you down this path to get you to the, you know, yeah. the three branches that you could continue off of.
And see, I take a very organic approach in what happens in my campaign with my kind of railroaded homebrew stuff. So for example, you guys just went to platform 69 and 3/4, which is hilarious because we like made it canon first session joking around, like,
right.
You know, Odors is like, you know, you guys camped the concept 69 3/4, and that was my mind to say, well, what the hell would actually be at 69 3/4?
Yeah, platform 69 3/4, by the way, is a on-campus secret strip club.
Along with tons of drugs. Yeah. And they kind like, of, and it's run by gnomes.
It's like Studio 54.
Yeah. And it's run by gnomes. And so yeah. The gnomes run the campus basically as an underground group that, you know, and they move platform 69 3/4 around, so like it's never the same area. Mm-hmm. You know, so where you were before might not be the same place next time. And so, but yeah, there's like gnome strippers and gnomes passing out drugs and all this other stuff. So like I let you guys have free reign of that. Like there was a fighting pit, there was gambling, there was all these crazy things going on. It was mm-hmm. just basically like gnome mafia hanging out. And so, yeah, like the group had mentioned 69 3/4 at some point, which is obviously a sexual play on platform 9 3/4. And I had to figure out a way to get there. So it turned out it was, you know, one of our, and we'll get into this in a moment too, but one of our characters or players was running for student body president on a whim, you know, and mm-hmm. we made her run as a Trump campaign basically for protecting Strixhaven and keeping out all the illegal, the illegal monsters and everything else like off campus and really building a wall and all this other stuff. And it was fun, and we were going to do the after party at 69 3/4, which allowed me to actually go ahead and create some additional material, right? So you didn't participate, but two of our characters participated in consuming certain drugs that would allow them to get a glimpse into a possible future. And so by pulling their possible futures, and that was storytelling on the fly as well, I can now potentially weave in different types of side quests or, you know, I'm thinking right now of potentially like a summer event, like as you guys go home for the summer, you guys kind of get together for a little side quest of like maybe two sessions where it's just a summer adventure before the school year starts. And like there's things that I can kind of dive into now by doing stuff like that, that on the fly organic growth of the campaign and storytelling that isn't part of the central, you know, Strixhaven story.
Yeah. When you open yourself up to that, there's number one, there's a lot of ways for things to go wrong. But number two, there's a lot of ways that you can surprise yourself and find yourself incorporating things and even improvising things better than you thought you could.
Yeah.
For example, the bag I gave you guys in the homebrew with the random items, I talked about it last time. I didn't plan for you to fight an ancient black dragon.
It just happened to be there.
You guys pulled an item. I was like, what would this be, have belonged to? Probably this. Would this creature have been pissed? Probably. It would probably be looking for it. And then I just created a series of events of, well, if you guys do this, then this.
Yeah.
If you, and there was no plan to attack Neverwinter. There was no plan to attack one of but the NPCs that you liked. But let's see, you gave the treasure, you sold the treasure away to somebody. So like now there's a consequence for that. And it just becomes one of those things of you start with like a little nugget and
it builds.
And it just builds.
Yeah. You know? So, you know, let's close out here, running out a little bit of time. Flaky players. So what do you do when somebody no-shows? You know, what are your house rules? And then player storylines, right? So how do you kind of go in deep on that planning or lack thereof? So I'll kind of start it off here. You know, in terms of house rules for sessions, I've kind of developed, and this became a thing due to when we were playing our Underdark campaign years ago, where we would go like literally 2 months of not playing because, oh, such and such a person can't make it. This person can't make it. This person can't make it. And you're running like 5-6 people, right? You shouldn't stop a campaign because one person can't make it.
I agree, but one of the problems with many of our campaigns and our players is it's couples. So if one person in that couple can't make it, the chances both of that entire couple's not going to make it. So then you're left with either half your adventuring party or you're left with like 3/4 of your adventuring party, and can they do it on their own?
Well, so before, when we were playing at Mel and Brad's house a while back, the only couples at the time, I mean, you had Jenny, right? But like,
yeah, not towards the end, until the end of that whole thing.
Yeah, not towards the end, and that was like
tail end,
right, of that campaign and what we were doing. So really, you just had Mel and Brad, who lived at the house, my wife and I. So if we were in, we were in. It was very rare that we canceled, actually. If we canceled, it's because we were sick or something, or we couldn't, like, just
Well, there was literally, if you wanted to look at it, it was two couples and myself, who was a fifth wheel, and the DM.
Yeah.
So if one of the couples couldn't do it, number one, if the hosting couple couldn't do it, we just didn't do it.
Yeah.
And if the other person couldn't do, if I wasn't there, you guys probably ran.
No,
but I don't think I ever
did.
Well, I don't think I ever missed.
Yeah, you never missed. If we missed, it was like once or twice. I don't think Mel and Brad were. Sometimes it was Ryan, like he couldn't go. But actually, Mel and Brad usually were the ones like, oh, we're on vacation, we can't do it. And it's like, oh, well, now Angela and I can't. So there was like periods of time, yes, where like a couple couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just wouldn't play.
Yeah. And so the kind of rule that I've had in effect now, it's like, and we're not playing this week, obviously. One of the main reasons is, you know, we're missing one central character, and then there's Ryan, and then you guys are present. Like, I could theoretically run a few three, but, like, you know, given our situation of we both have a common player that cancels literally, like, an hour before, a few hours before, or just doesn't show and says they are going to show, and, you know, that's kind of railroaded me in my sessions because I've had critical points of the campaign tied to this individual. And I'm planning for it. And it's like, there was literally a day where I'm like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to run the campaign without them. And everyone's like, no. Like, you know, if you run it, like, just make sure that their parts are, you know, not kind of talked about right away. I'm like, fine, I'll do that.
I agree with that to an extent. So I think everyone should get, number one, I think in most cases, real life comes up. I think if you are dealing with a group that is made up of, I think it's, first of all, it's the size of the group.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with people who no show or anything like that, if it's the size of the group. So if you only have four players.
And one person is
in
show.
And two people don't show, it's just the DM and the other two players, just cancel the session. You have half the group. I think if you have 66% of the people, depending on your group makeup, you run it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if it was
Well, like I have five players, right? And so, well,
if there were six players and two don't make it, I'd run it with four.
Yeah.
So I got four of the people here. I'm still going. Mm-hmm. If we have seven players for whatever reason, if there were seven and two people don't make it, I'm still going. But I think the smaller your group gets, the more prohibitive it is when one person can't make it.
Yeah, and it's a little different because you obviously, the storytelling and such with such a small group, it's a little different, right? And
it also depends on the story you're telling.
That too.
Is their background tied to what you're doing
and
that week?
And that had been my issue recently is I had 2 weeks in a row that like 1 week it was, hey, we're going to tell this person's story. I had to shift things around in a direction where it still got you to where I needed to be. And then I told that person, like, hey, your character needs to be here next week. So just heads up. And then we find out literally an hour before, oh, well, I can't make it. And it's like, you know, I'm just going to run it now. And if you show, you show.
Listen, you're right in that regard. If the time is put in to incorporate a person's character into the story and short of a medical emergency or a family tragedy, which is 100% always understandable.
Yep, 100%.
And completely accommodated for it. If you're in a group where they don't do that, fucking get a new group because that shit's crazy.
Or if you like give, like Ryan yesterday gave me like a day heads up. He's like, oh, hey, by the way. And he only got a day heads up because, well, we all got like a 2 day heads up on a birthday party this weekend, right?
Right.
So like, you know, and that's understandable. Oh, hey, it's such and such person's birthday party. I'm going to be out there tomorrow. Okay, cool. Like, totally understand that. Like, it's a mutual friend.
It's not somebody who's doing it on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. So, he's here every single week.
Right. So I guess you build credit in that regard.
Yeah,
you're showing up and then the occasional you can't be there. I think what you have to do is you just have to say, especially if that person who's flaking is a friend in other regards, you just say, okay, I'm just not going to spend the energy to incorporate your backstory more than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
And you show up, you play. If you don't show up for a crucial part in your character's moment, and it is part of the story at this point,
you're just going to miss it.
Then you're going to miss that crucial part of your character's moment. And it is what it is. You chose not to show up with I can't make it because of, like I said, legitimate reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last minute choices or prioritizing other things that is not on that just come up instead of being on a set schedule, like other people are waiting for you to show up for something. There's a difference between those.
Yeah.
Quite a large one. So like for that player for my campaign, I have decided to, because I don't have a character sheet for them.
Yeah. Same here.
I'm going to fabricate one that I know is close to what they had. Because I still remember some of their key six stats, and then I know what class they are, I know where they went with certain things, so I think I can build it up to that point. And then that character is going to be just a NPC interactive thing, because in the grand scheme of things, the player character in my campaign, all of you guys don't know anything more than what I'm telling you and what you're experiencing. So it's not like that person not being there to play that character is going to be detrimental to the story that the rest of you are experiencing. The combat is designed for 4 to 5 characters, so losing a player can really hurt you guys when you're in combat. So that's why if I create some kind of sheet, you guys have something that you can utilize. But yeah, just going forward, I would say, it all depends. Is when the person shows up, does everyone have a good time, or are they a problem when they show up? And if everyone's still having a good time and they're just flaking on the side, then I say you just run them as a periodic NPC. Hey, you showed up, fine. Here you go, here's your sheet. This is where everyone's at right now.
Yeah, if they were a problem, obviously you'd kind of be like, whatever.
Yeah,
like
please don't come back.
Yeah, and so that's obviously not our issue here. So I'm taking a similar approach with mine. I'm not going to have a character sheet because you guys are already like in a few times you've had battles, there hasn't been an issue. And I've kind of foolproofed in a way anyways that you guys aren't really going to die in this campaign. So even if you guys TPK'd, I'm still not going to like just, oh, you got to create a new character because you died on campus. Like, I'm not planning to go that direction. Whereas I know if you're homebrew, you're like, hey, you could die. Like, and you might have, you know, situations where you got to re-roll or whatever it may be.
Yep.
So it depends on the DM too, and what they're trying to do in terms of, you know, character deaths and such. So like this person, you know, I'll have them similar, you know, they'll be a background character. They'll be present in the room, but when battles are present, they're just not there. And that's fine. I don't think it's going to be,
I'm going to have the person just be there, but I'm going to give you guys control of the sheet.
Yeah.
You guys run it, or you guys can run any of the other NPCs you've collected along the way. Mm-hmm. And the player character has effectively become an NPC for the rest of you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the right approach.
Yeah. And I think if they are the, here's the big problem though. If that character was a linchpin character and the person's not showing up to play, that causes issues if you, for the DM and the rest, if you really have to rewrite the entire story now and change mm-hmm. things around, which is what happened with the homebrew when the homebrew fell apart after stage, I don't know, after the second session or first session.
Yeah, you had to rewrite it all.
I had seven players. I had already spent time trying to integrate each character's story in some way into the background of what I was doing. And so, for example, our friend Brad stopped playing. He had a dwarf from Gauntlegrim who he had lost his wife and his child. There was a tragedy, whatever. So when you guys went to Gauntlegrim, his character was going to have a big thing to play there. There was going to be stuff there for him and all sorts of things. And so what I did was I just cut it out. And simply because you changed your character, I was like, well, I'll just incorporate things from your character's background, your new character that you were playing, into that Gauntlegrim space to create some kind of like touchstone for your character's history.
And honestly, like in that homebrew campaign, I'm kind of feeling the like, you know, I'm going to be playing my third character in that campaign. Right. And because my other characters are off doing whatever the hell they're doing, I may at some point consider like, hey, what about that dwarf Sonya that was playing, right? That barbarian, maybe she comes into play again later on down the road where I just kind of pick her back up. Obviously with the hemo background, I kind of want to go back to that character mm-hmm. at some point, but yeah, I don't know how long you're going to stretch it out, but like I'm personally okay bouncing between several different characters because I enjoy it for one thing, the difference in characters.
Yeah, when one starts to get stale, you move over to the other.
Yeah, move over to the other. And from a story perspective, it could have like, it made sense for Sonya to kind of retire, right? In that, you know, hey, I'm doing things for Gauntlegrim, right? Now, at some point, there could be some crazy thing that's happening. My other character goes off and she kind of comes back in the fray, right? To kind of help the group. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the direction I've figured with that, but we haven't done homebrew in a while now.
No, but in also we were going to introduce our character who has been our person who has been flaky as of late had a character in the homebrew that we just touched on and introduced because we'd all made the agreement we were just going to move over to the Witchlight and take a break from the homebrew for a while.
So luckily we didn't integrate it.
But her character story plays a lot into the background of I've already tied it and a lot of cool stuff that can happen with where you guys are going next.
Yeah, but you could theoretically like just still run that and have that as an NPC.
Right. Yeah. So because it hasn't been too deep.
Yeah.
But it's one of those situational things that you have to weigh, like I said, is their presence hurting, is their lack of presence continuing to hurt your planning and your story, then maybe don't plan for them to be there mm-hmm. and they just, here's your character. You just follow along at this point.
And we'll catch you up every week. We talk about what happened in the story. Anyways, we do a recap. If you miss 3-4 weeks and then you finally show up, well, guess what? You're only going to really get last week's recap. And if you're questioning what the hell happened, tough luck, you know, like that's just kind of how it has to go at that point. Like I'm not going to stop my planning and process. Like I get that life happens, but if it's things that are, you know, avoidable, right. Or you don't give enough of a heads up.
Or rearranging priorities to put a scheduled session that you knew was going to happen and to blow it off for something else. Okay. But like, just know that that's affecting other people too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll go ahead and close out the episode, but if you're a DM or a player for D&D, of course, comments on, you know, any of the subjects we talked about.
How many times are you going to keep taking out your penis during this episode? We're in the double digits at
five,
this point.
Five. No, you're not counting right. It's five. Did you roll like times two or something like two?
No. Did I miss? Was one of the nuts when you pulled out your nuts?
It was just sack. Yeah, it was just sack.
Well, look, I'm thinking of it as a collective bit.
As a collective bit, it's probably 20. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Talk about your DM horror stories, player horror stories. Do you have a flaky player, etc.? you know, comments on, you know, our social media platforms, or of course on the YouTube or even podcast review about how much you loved our D&D episode. This has been a new episode of the Game of Flavors podcast. My name's John. I've been joined by Joel.
Me.
And thanks for listening.
Deuces.